you are then right there, and you can only tell what you have experienced. You cannot tell what others have experienced, because that would not be true, not quite true.
Right.
And even so, when we relate our own personal experiences, they become sometimes a little bit too illustrative and a little bit too far-fetched, because to us, as we have experienced them, they are just there, because they are dear and very, very dear to us. And therefore we express it as much as we can with an overemphasis, with perhaps some sort of an exaggeration. Now, what can one say?
Anything that will touch our heart.
So, the biggest moment in my life has been when I met Baba for the first time.
Yes, tell us that. Bala Sahib, so here he is telling us when he met Baba for the first time. Come here, because he is a chronicler.
Oh, he is, right? Well, I have to preface that with my previous endeavor of spiritual knowledge. But that was done in an intellectual way when I was a young fellow. I studied all the different religions and philosophies thought up by men. Studied the religions, the Bibles and Quran, and the Buddhist catechism and all that sort of thing. The Eightfold Path and you name it. I studied them all. And I found them all limited to a certain extent, because all these things were given the promises of a pie in the sky, so to speak. Well, that didn't go with me. Finally, that took me into its fold, and I started to forget about the spiritual endeavor.
Took you in his fold?
What?
Who took you in his fold?
Life. Maya. So, in 1947, at the ebb tide of our lives, ebb tide, I mean by that a complete moral breakdown and oversaturation of a body, spirit, and social life. Complete emptiness. It didn't give us anything we what we're living for. And self-destruction was contemplated. And taking a trip aboard ship, going over the side, quietly disappearing. And I wanted to put a gun on my head and blow my brain out, that sort of thing.
And what about Ella? She there?
She didn't. She's here.
Was she there?
Very much.
She was with me together. We were together.
Together you wanted to do that?
No, not together. No, she was in her own way and I'm my own way.
Oh, I see.
She didn't want to leave a mess. I don't want to be a mess, I guess. And every act. And when I had the gun on my head and I thought to myself, well, is there really anybody who would feel sorry for you? Sorry for you? What is this? You, when I threw the gun in the back of the door, nobody's going to feel sorry for you. Well, why should you do then that? I wanted somebody to feel sorry for me, that's all. And not very, very much later, a lady walked into my office. I was sitting behind my desk there, and she wanted to rent an apartment. And we were talking business. And in the middle of our business conversation, she said, "What is he doing here?" And she pointed to the corner of my office. There was a Buddha figure, very antique, very costly. I had a permanent light over it. And she said, "What is he doing here?" I looked at her, this year we are doing business, and she talked about this one there. Said, "Oh, well, he's giving me food for thoughts on occasions." So she said, "Well, will we try to start business again?" And so she said, "Well, but what are there curls on his head?" I looked at her again and thought, no, I better look for the door because I don't know what this woman is up to. I said, here, of course. I want to be the bright boy in the class. She said, oh, no, those are not here. They're snails. I checked on looking at her. Snails? She said, yes, snails. Yeah. Well, and she says, yes. Buddha was sitting in the open field, and the sun was beating down very hard, and the snails took compassion on him and covered his head with their bodies. And I looked at him, swallowed him, and I said, well, very interesting, very interesting. And while she was talking, her coat, her fur coat, very expensive fur coat, kept on flopping open and shut. There was a button in there. She had a button and that didn't fit very good with her fur coat. We might have traveled worth $1,000 to get a 5 cent worth of button there. But apparently she was showing it, and I kept on looking at it. And I didn't want to say anything, but I kept on looking. So, oh, she says, do you see this button here? I said, yes, who is he, a yogi? She said, oh, no, he's a perfect master. Do tell me about him, please, do tell me about him. Well, not now, some later. I thought, what was this? She's talking about this. I said, no, she'd ask her. But she wouldn't tell me. So, we concluded our business, and she rented the duplex apartment to which Baba came on interviewed the Westerners.
Who was she?
The lady?
Yeah.
Was Mrs. Ivy Deuce. She just had returned from India with her daughter. She was sent there by this Sufi woman. What?
Rabia
Martin. Yeah. Rabia Martin had sent her, and she said, if you want to take over the Sufis as a merchant, you will have to see a perfect master who's in the body. This, who is Mayor Baba. So, you better go through and see him, get his okay and the verification that you qualify. So she had just returned from that trip where Baba told her, if she comes to see India, she can see him for 1 hour. But if she came to see Baba, she can stay 5 days. She stayed 5 days. And so that was the culmination. She had returned at that time from India looking for the apartment because her husband was being transferred from Washington to New York. Her husband was vice president of the Saudi Arabia Bell Corporation and a big horse, and so he needed a large apartment to entertain business and dignitaries and that sort of thing. And so a couple of weeks later, after she had moved in, I met her in the elevator going up. And she said, oh, Mr. Winterfeld, I have something for you. I said, yes? All right, then. Would you mind coming to my apartment? I said, yes. So I went upstairs, but more or less for the intention to see what she did to the apartment, because that was my duty to find out what condition she left the apartment. And so I came up and she handed me a book. And I looked at the book and thought, oh, this kindergarten stuff again. I have been through this once before, and here it is again. Avatar. God descended. Avatar, God descended. So I said, thank you, and I took the book down, but I put it in my desk in the apartment. And Ella looked at it, and as she told me later, she said, when she saw the picture first, she said, it's such a Christ-like picture in part, and Christ has said, beware of false Christ, of the false Christ. But yet he looks so Christ-like. And she started to read, and then she wouldn't put the book down anymore. She kept on reading. Well, to make a long story short,
just interrupt and say that Avatar, I had no idea about Avatars or perfect masters. I was not seeking God, you know. I was a little bit dissatisfied with religion, going there, confessing your sins and so forth. But I know there was some existence above us, which is Avatar. And I saw this picture, Christ-like picture. You better beware. But I started to read. And in the state I was in, I just felt Baba's love. Nothing but Baba's love, I was home. That was all for me. Avatar, perfect master. I wasn't even thinking about it. It was Baba and Baba, his love.
So finally she let me have the book to read, because before that I couldn't get the other book, because now I saw her interest in it. And I said, well, what this is all about, I have to read this book called Kindergarten Scott. And when I started reading, I felt there was such a practical sense of living in it. I mean, it was by Jean Avril, not by Baba, but it was by Jean Avril, her impression of Baba, and how she reacted and how her husband Martin's was reacting. So then we got to studying Sufism and the discourses, of course, about Baba and the Sufi law, which is an ancient law which trying to preserve the original scriptures of all the great masters. And here I got caught in reading the discourses. I studied them very carefully, and I was amazed that such a thing could be brought forth to mankind's knowledge, the practical sense of living, if we would apply it. If we would apply that what Baba has said in the discourses, everything would be fine for each one of us. This is such a tangible thing. The young people are saying oftentimes, well, you got your orders, but we never met Baba, we don't know where the orders come from. I always say, look at the discourse, it's full of orders in there from the front to the end. There are all orders in there. If you only would follow one perfectly, the rest would follow more easy. So if you do that, you'll be alright. And so I was alright, because when I read that, I thought, by golly. When I studied the book, the discourses, and then I said, when I got through absorbing everything, I said to Ella, I said, Mush, I have read the discourses, but they are the perfect manual to God realization. I have studied them, and I know all about it, but where is my God realization now? And she said, well, you will have to experience all that. I said, well, it's going to take a heck of a long time. Well, so we studied, became Sufis, initiated, twice, all that. And to me, Sufism had a certain fascination, in as much as it went along the Baba's lines in a certain way, but not quite it. It was more in a roundabout way, I would say, in as much as it detailed each item of what Baba had to say, if you want to take it up there, this. Now, after a year and a half to 2 years, Ella became conscious of the fact that there is Angatan and Maya Baba, two masters. One is gone, the other one is here. And she decided that she would follow the living master, Maya Baba. And she asked Ivadut whether she could be released from the Sufi oath, which is it's a very difficult thing to do, because once you have committed yourself to under oath to anything, it is a very hazardous thing to do, to undertake. However, Ella was pleading with Ivadut to release her from the Sufi oath, and she would do anything under the sun, and she would work day and night for her, anything, would let her only study Baba, the living master.
I didn't say study, I said that only
very well. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, Richard, of course, was deeply hurt. And, but finally, she let her go. But I carried on, because I have to take, I'm a very analytical guy, I have to take things apart and see how it works, and then put it together again. And, so I studied for 5 years, both Angad Baba, Mir Baba and Angad Khan. On the 1952, we received an invitation from the Rio Machabelli, with whom we became befriended in the meantime. As the ladies came back in 1947 from India, we became then acquainted with the ladies, like Margaret and Elizabeth and all the Western ladies. And Norina, especially, became very befriended with us. When she met us in the plaza for the first time in New York, we came into the room and she embraced us together. A tall, stately lady, very, very beautiful, beautiful, in spite of her advanced age. She embraced us and she said, "Straight up the mountains. Don't follow anyone's advice. Just straight up the mountain. Follow your heart up to Baba. And now we are all one family." And so it has been. And we received an invitation from Norina to be at Myrtle Beach on the 10th of May at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to meet the master. Well, 10 horses wouldn't have been able to keep us away. That's a sure thing. And because I knew this was a criterion now, it's a proving point in my life to what is reality? What is real? This was the point, the very moment of my life, that was the point. On hand in hand, we came both into the lagoon cabin, just like two children. My father was sitting on a blue chair, on a blue couch. He gets up, opens his arms, embraces Ellen. She drops her head like a tired bird. And all she could say was, "Oh, Baba." Complete relaxation. And I stood and looked at her, trying to analyze what's going on. What is this? This spirituality, how does it work out now? And he looked at me, betrayed one eye and grinned from ear to ear, and reason, 5 years of study, reason. They said, "What's the balloon? They're not the door." And it was replaced by instantaneous knowledge on recognition and conviction of the absolute truth of that with whom I was faced in. The ultimate, the own point of creation, the God itself. That's what I was faced with. But that realization has sustained me through all these years. And nothing can wipe it out. Nothing. Because that he embraced you, maybe it's physical or spiritual, whether he is in the body or out of the body, you feel like taking a warm bath of love. Just, you get so full of ecstasy. You get so uplifted. And all the dross things of life drop away from you. They don't mean anything. They become so meaningless. There is nothing but in life but has any value. Only he is the only value, the only truth, the only reality that I experienced at that moment. So, what is there to be said? Is this just like, I'm repeating what somebody else said, and that was Alan Cohn, when he was in Myrtle Beach. He said, "If you haven't got it, you haven't got it. It's not there. If you haven't got it, it's not there." So, and Don Stephen, also in Myrtle Beach, said once, 2,000 years ago, the followers of Christ, 1,200 years ago, a follower of Christ was able to tap the spiritual force with love, and he became God realized. Saint Francis of Assisi. He was able to tap that force, and we should be more so able to tap that force, because Baba has left us only just a few years ago. This should be much more potent. So that is this. I believe in it. And As Baba said, faith is not blind. Faith is all-knowing, but not mentally, but spiritually. That's the spiritual wisdom which Baba or God can only give us. That's the only thing. Jai Baba.
Jai Baba.
Jai Baba.
When we were in 1952 with Baba in your apartment in New York, I will never forget. There was Baba sitting, looking so radiant, so Baba. And Ella and you had for him, among the other things, a plate of with a luscious bunch of grapes.
Yeah.
And Baba looked so happy, as if, you know, that is just what he wanted. And then he called Ella over and gave her one grape. He held that grape in his hand and said, come. He signaled to Ella to come. And as she came, just those few steps, just the way she came, she approached Baba, the way he looked, and she knelt and held out her hand, and he put that grape in her hand. It was, for me, Baba was Christ again, and it was a scene from the past. It was as if just that glimpse. And that has remained, that impression has remained so strong with me that whenever I think of our visit to New York, to me, the most predominant impression of the visit is that little movement, that gesture, that give and take between the beloved and lover is very, very beautiful. It was like a memory come to life again.
Yeah.
We were bad. Baba was Jesus. I was watching this. She came and took that grave.
And to him who wants to see Baba, he will see Baba. Only this is the spiritual need, not the wanting. It's the spiritual need at times will give into due to outside impressions which bear down on our minds so much so that it has a, it makes an impression on the spiritual being within us. And when that spiritual pressure builds up, then Baba appears within you. He becomes so real as if you are sitting here with him, exactly the same way. There's no difference.
That is why, even in the time of Lord Krishna, lovers like Meera, who we know of, praise, her love for her Lord was so great, yet she had never seen him physically. Just as there was Radha, there was Meera. And so he has it, because he's so vast, he is not just limited to that time. He overflows and it just goes on and all it grows. Oh, he grows. You gotta watch out.
Well, love is just like an insidious poison that penetrates everything.
You haven't seen a whole bag full of that Baba poison. You haven't.
A whole bag of?
Whole bag of what?
No.
Empty.
No.
Empty.
No.
Where is his car? Where is the car?
The car has been scrapped, has been put to rest. after Michael Charles and the family has completely given it the fatal blow. What happened? Nothing. Just turned the inside out and the lining was ripped up and everything on the body was rusted, rotted outside, no repairs were done to it. So.
With a camel, with that bell. And at night when the camel would rest, it was fine. But in the morning, early morning, when it had to be made to stand up to start, it would groan and it would moan.
Yeah.
The squeaks in the house that camel would give, you would think somebody was beating it. I was told that they always do that. But once they're up and in harness again. They will go on, if need be, till they drop. And this was said at the time. What did Fred say?
You described
adding the old age perfect.
No, and Baba said, when we said that, this talk came up, and Mara in her childhood, when her father was a high official in the forestry business, and they had to move from place to place, and they used to go on camels. And she said, yes, that's exactly what they do. And Baba said, that's right. You're all the same. That's what you know. Or you can move it once we're up.
Poor Gustav used to get so stiff, you see, that we had to pull him up from the horse bed. There was no bed or anything. He was just lying there. And he used to get so stiff. Then we have to massage his body, and
particularly when you were up in northern part of India, the lady given into the caravan, and you had to sleep outside on the door, and the fog was drilling through the mountain passes, and you were shivering your timbers and just rubbing all over.
The dew would fall on us. The dew.
Before.
Maybe they have heard it before. They are always new.
They're always new.
More
that's true.
Right?
Yes, oftentimes I read Baba's books.
Have they heard that story? Of course, it has been taped so often too.
What is that story?
But Baba Jarepalakadhunatata for the Krishna Namadhinika.
I don't know. Ask. Whether they have heard or not.
Have you heard the stories of how Baba would help particular needy families in India who would not put out their hands for help, but how he would go out of his way to a particular place and they didn't know why, and it was just to have one family. You don't know. That's a beautiful series of stories.
You don't know that?
The story about the poor man was in the building of the platform for him outside of his home.
No, 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 that's no, yes. I know they haven't heard this. This is personal. So
okay.
So here you go. It's such a job, I know.
No, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. But I would like to bathe today, you see, instead of my giving baths to
others.
So today is my day of bath. In presence of our fountains, Baba fountains have come. So, Fred, as I have been telling these people, you know, they have only heard of Baba observing silence, of speech, not speaking. But I say that greater than his silence, there is acts in silence. Nobody knows that. Nobody has heard of those acts. He not only observed silence of speech and tongue, but then all his acts were in silence too. And only the surface of it was visible, you see, to those who would come and go and all that. But those who were blessed by him, or whom he wanted to be close to him, they were just superficially witnessed there. And some of the stories that I have witnessed, some of the incidents, were very, they are still alive. They are there, you see, they are fresh in my memory. So, one, of course, his different phases of activities in his ministry was, as you know, the old life, collecting all the followers, then he collected the lepers, and then he collected the mad and the musts and all that. Then he made us go out in search of the ideal boy, and then he made us go out in search of the ideal girl, and then he made us go in search of the really needy. Well, who are the really needy, you see? India is full of beggars. And beggars are there, you see, in millions here in India. He didn't want them. He wanted the ones, you see, the families who were really in need of monetary help and who wouldn't want to stretch out their hand asking others for help. That's a difficult task. With this wild, wide country, how to go out in search of that and find out these families. But he asked us to do so. So we went out in search. He wanted to help them. himself being the fakir, as he would call him. Fakir, you know what fakir means?
No.
A man who has pockets but has holes in his pockets.
Yeah.
A fakir means the penniless one. So he would himself call that he is the fakir of fakirs, and the emperor of emperors, simultaneously. So, he asked us to go out in search of these families whom he wanted to help. Maybe through his own.